Welcome to the Tech Talk Show, an hour of news, views and discussion. Well, welcome to the show. I'm Steve Griffiths, and joining me in the studio is Dan. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Steve. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too. How's things? How was your Christmas and New Year?
It was fantastic, yeah.
We've got someone on the line, so we're going to go to Lisa Papp in a minute. But we're just going to have a quick couple of news stories.
Ooh,
so
yeah.
Shall I kick it off?
Please do.
Obviously, big in the news this week is CES at Las Vegas. Yeah. Loads and loads of new products coming up, wearables, TVs, all sorts of stuff. But there's a great deal of criticism going on about UK and their lack of support. And I actually saw a really great story. There's a guy called Danny Manu who's got a company, and the company have actually developed a translating earpiece. So it's linked with an app. It looks like amazing technology. So it can translate languages directly, real time, into your ear from various things. 30 or different languages.
Well, like the Babelfish.
It is like a Babelfish. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly what I thought of, yeah. But Danny was out there as a sole guy on his own, and he was trying to get some interest in his product there. Mm. The actual company is My Manu, is his web, his Twitter handle, and it's a great, great product. The actual company is Click. Yeah. Oh, he was funded. He's funded Click, his company, out of his own money.
Wow.
But he's also done some crowdfunding. So brilliant. What news have you got for us?
We've got some stuff for CES maybe a bit later. But one thing I saw is that the NHS is trialing an AI chatbot to help relieve some of the pressure on the non-emergency 111 numbers.
So brilliant.
They're trialling in North London, so 1.2 million people living in Camden, Islington, Enfield and Barnet will be using this app to trial it over 6 months. And they use it over at, and it just asks them a series of questions, and the algorithm will then sort of judge the
severity.
I
think during the Christmas period, the 999 system has been overwhelmed. So anything that can relieve that has got to be a good idea.
Certainly. And 111 seems to be getting quite a lot of criticism at the moment.
Great.
As well.
So without further ado, we go to Lisa on the phone. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to the
show.
Hi.
Thank
you so much for joining us. It's great that you're here. So your company is Walk With Path. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And that's an unusual name. Where did you come by that name?
It was actually initially just called Path because the idea was to create mobility products to help people to feel more confident when they walk and so on. So Path sort of seemed to, I suppose, work well for that kind of theme. But obviously that's quite a generic name. So when it comes to set up a company, that wasn't really a possibility to just keep it that short. So I have to come up with something along those lines, really.
Oh, no. That's great. So how long have you been in business? How long have you been working in this tech environment?
Well, I started working on the two products that we're covering today back in 2014 when I was studying innovation design engineering at the Royal College of Art and Imperial College. Mm-hmm. And I then founded the company in November of that year. So since 2014, just over 2 years now.
Okay, and tell us a little bit about the two products you have at the moment that your company are producing.
Yes, of course. We're actually still at prototyping stage with both. One of them is a shoe attachment that provides visual cues, specifically targeting people with Parkinson's who suffer from a symptom called freezing of gait.
Right.
It's a fairly common symptom, which basically for the individual feels as if their feet become glued to the floor.
Right.
And obviously that's quite an uncomfortable situation. And as you can imagine, if you're in the process of walking and suddenly your feet are not following, there's a large risk of falling at that point. Yeah, exactly. So we found that you can use visual cues to help to actually trigger the ability to take another step. And we've done some trials with an academic partner in Holland to validate that with our product. So we're currently looking at launching it and hoping to start making it commercially available in April this year. So soon, actually, which is quite exciting.
I mean, it's quite a common disease, isn't it, Parkinson's amongst elderly?
It is quite common. It's estimated there's about 10 million people with it worldwide. So yeah. It is fairly common, especially in Europe and US and so on.
Yeah, I'm just watching your video online, actually, as we're speaking.
So while you're watching that,
Steve. Yeah, I know, I'm just having a look at it. It's really interesting. It's a really good video.
So, Lisa, whilst Steve's watching that, there's the other product.
I can do two things at once, Dan, honestly.
So there's the other product you do as well, isn't there? I think it's like an insole,
yes.
Is that right?
Yes, that's right. Yes, it's an insole that has sensors and provides a vibrational sensation to the sole of the foot of the wearer.
Okay.
And that's intended to help to improve balance for a much broader population, for instance, elderly in general, or people with a lack of sensation on the soles of their feet. So there's been some evidence in the literature to show that you can use this kind of vibrational stimuli to help to improve balance. And we're currently doing some trials actually together with UCL in a specific population to try and validate that further with our specific product. So it's quite exciting. There's also lots of kind of information to be gathered about the gait pattern of the individual through our sensor function. So it's actually got several different applications.
Right, and how does that work then? Is it that they get feedback in certain zones of the insole as they put their foot down, or is it across the whole of the insole?
Yes, exactly. So it's at the kind of main pressure points. There is a location at the heel, and there is also a location underneath the ball of the foot in both the kind of medial interior side and also on the lateral side of the foot. So you have three locations essentially, which are the ones where you typically apply the most pressure during walking. So essentially the vibrational stimuli just comes on when the insole observes pressure, which is when you have your foot approaching the ground and on the ground. Whereas when it's in movement, it doesn't have the vibration.
Yeah, I see. Okay, so you know, it's training, giving them the feedback that they've put their foot down correctly and they can adjust their weight onto that foot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And also just sometimes people can't necessarily feel the floor at all. And so the vibration can be an kind of added sensation to just the normal sense of touch that you would have.
Right, I understand. And with the shoe attachment, I think it's Pathfinder it's called. How does it provide visual clues? Is there a display or something?
So there's a laser sitting on top of the shoe. So where you have your toes inside the shoe, on top of that location, we place a laser, which is green, and it's essentially is broken into a line. So similar to the kind of laser levels that you can use in DIY situations, which also make a line on a wall, ours just make a line on the floor. And so it's in front of the opposite foot. Again, it's activated when the foot is still. So if you imagine that you have your left foot on the floor, that will project the line in front of the right foot. So the right foot will step across that line. Once that is on the floor, that will then project a line in front of the left foot for that to step across. So it works in a pattern in this manner. So typically people with this kind of symptom in Parkinson's, for instance, walk very well on staircases because there's a kind of pattern to it and a rhythm. So in a way, you know, we can say that we're translating that into any surface, really, that people walk on by giving that kind of rhythm and ability to use those cues to have that pattern to follow.
That's really
good. So how hard has it been to actually get your idea in front of the right healthcare professionals and the right people? I mean, that must be quite a challenge, is it?
Yes, certainly. It's been a difficult journey, I would say, in various ways. I think as it goes for startups, there's an element of luck, perhaps, in who you meet and when and who can facilitate what kind of introductions. In terms of healthcare professionals, we've been quite lucky, I think, in making good contacts into researchers who have shown an interest in working with us on either supporting it with information to us or helping us to kind of think about studies that we can do and so on. I think the more difficult side of it is actually acceptance into the system in terms of making it commercial in that manner.
Yeah.
So we're looking at a direct-to-consumer model.
Yes.
When we go live, where people have the ability to buy it directly, either via our website, or we're also working to set up partnerships with, for instance, patient organizations and so on, who might also be able to help.
Because that is really difficult, is to get clinicians to know that your product and technology is available and actually can really help with a particular disease or a particular illness. That must be really difficult to do, I assume.
Absolutely. I think that is really hard, and it's very hard to kind of penetrate and get time into some of these individuals that make those decisions. It seems to be more available on a kind of research level than on a more commercial level into healthcare.
So, and how much harder is it doing business in the UK than it was? I know you worked and supported quite a lot of tech within Denmark. Is that right?
Well, I'm originally from Denmark,
right,
but I've been in the UK since 2001.
Right, okay.
So,
but you were involved.
I have most of my kind of connections here and networks.
All right, okay. So,
yeah, so I was just wondering what led you to, you know, working on this particular problem?
Well, it started with personal interest, really. My father has Parkinson's. And I've noticed him suffer from the three things that I described just a little while ago. Mm-hmm. And there's no real good method to deal with that at present. And medication doesn't really work very well. And even if you have medication, everybody tends to go through off periods where the medication is less effective at certain times of the day. So people kind of develop their own kind of coping strategies for dealing with this freezing symptom. Mm-hmm. But my sort of initial gut feeling was there must be the ability to do something else in a non-invasive way whereby you might be able to provide only benefit, really. Mm-hmm. And I started exploring the problems also at a deeper level, and both worked with people with Parkinson's and also people with multiple sclerosis, on really understanding everything around their mobility issues. Mm-hmm. So I spend a lot of time both with individuals with these conditions, but also with their families and some healthcare professionals and researchers to really understand the kind of day-to-day effects of living with these conditions. Mm-hmm. And the impact that it has. And that's what led to focus specifically on some key areas and then investigating those further and developing the concepts of potential solutions for overcoming those problems.
We've had a couple of questions via our Twitter. Just one question about, do wearables need to go through medical device regulation approval? Is that something that has to be undertaken in the UK, or are they exempt from any approvals necessary?
So I think it really depends what the wearable does.
Okay. There's
different classifications that you need to consider with regards to whether it's a medical product. I think if something is acting as a diagnostic, then it will very likely be classed as a medical product.
Yep.
But wearables generally are a bit of a gray zone, where it really depends what kind of claims you make as in terms of what they do.
Right. So,
because
you
can probably make
assume
something that
yours is an assistive technology, therefore it should probably come. It doesn't come within the regulations, then, is that right?
Well, we've been speaking to a few different CE marking agents that are helping in this field, and there's different opinions, actually. But what we've decided to do with our Pathfinder, which is the first one we're launching, is that it will become a Class 1 medical device, and that's because it's trying to deal with a specific symptom. So it's aiming to help people to overcome freezing of gait, which is a symptom of Parkinson's and then for that reason it falls into a class one medical device. If we did not label it as a class one medical device, we wouldn't be able to say that it helps people with overcoming freezing.
Yeah, okay.
And that's kind of our key point about it. So yeah. it makes a lot of sense for us to make it a medical. Okay. But I think it really depends on each product and what it aims to do.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And so developing products such as this take time to perfect, as you've sort of indicated. I think you said you started in 2014. And obviously there's a need for sort of funding and doing funding rounds. Is there any advice to any of our other listeners that may be looking to start up or starting a journey like this? Is there any advice you could sort of give?
Yes, definitely. I was lucky in the very beginning to get some different grants, mm-hmm. which helped me kick off, and I was on my own at that point, so the grants could go quite far because there was only really me and me to support on that. Mm-hmm. So I would definitely encourage people to look at grants. There's a lot of things available from various sources. And also, we just had an investment round in the summer of last year.
Okay.
With angel investors, and I would have to say it took a larger amount of time that I had anticipated. People generally say it takes about 3 months to fundraise, but I would probably say it can easily take more, especially if it's your first time, and you know, the process will be new and so mm-hmm. on, and what you need to provide and negotiating can take a really long time, even after somebody has decided that they want to invest.
Sure.
So it can easily take 6 to 9 months, I would say. So I think it's about really starting early, planning what you want to do. And I think from our own perspective, you know, given we have two products, we're still quite a small team. For the time being, we've decided to just focus on one, really, because mm-hmm. otherwise you're kind of moving a little bit on two different aspects and you don't really get a lot of traction anywhere. So I would really say to focus quite tightly on one thing and try and move that ahead before then coming back and focusing on something else.
That's really good.
I think that's something we've learned ourselves.
A lot of companies that we talk to, you know, they say that you just can't spread yourself so far. You have to really focus on what your core product is and actually get that to market first and then look at diversification and other things later. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us. Where can we get more information about your products and your company?
Well, we've got a website, walkwithpath.com, where you can find hopefully the information you need. Otherwise, there's also our email, so people are free to contact us, of course.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us, and it's great to hear about the technology and the great wearables you're developing. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Cheers. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Well, there you go, Dan. That was actually really interesting to hear. Yeah. We're joined by Harry. Hi, Harry.
Hello, Steve.
And James is with us as well. Hi, James.
Hi, Steve.
James is our guest producer today, so welcome,
guest producer. For Chris.
Chris is away on holiday. So what's happening in the Twitter sphere and social media, Harry? What have we got going on?
Well, I mean, a lot of it is obviously CES. That's
Well, funny enough, Dan's got a story about CES.
There's a couple that I picked up. So some sort of funny ones. So all quite funny ones, potentially.
Go on, well, if it's as funny as you can be, Dan.
L'Oreal have developed a smart hairbrush, which will advise you how best to brush your hair. Harry definitely
needs it. He's been using it, I think.
It looks like you've got a bit of product going on there, Harry. Have you got a bit in there?
Product of a mistake.
I got a hairbrush for Christmas. That was one of my...
Really?
I've never had a hairbrush before. So
what?
No, you're joking.
Not the L'Oreal one, because I hear that was £160.
Yeah, it's quite expensive, really? Yeah.
Yeah, it's got an inbuilt microphone, so you can hear for damages in your hair. Yeah, and
it has all sorts of sensors, and it downloads to an app.
Do I get a discount? Because obviously you've got a lot less hair than Harry or James. What else? Yeah. Smart hairbrush.
There's LG have developed a fridge that's got Amazon's Alexa in it.
Okay.
So which is quite
Alexa.
You know, Alexa. Sorry. So it's got a camera inside, like a lot of the smart fridges that there are showing there, that shows you, you know, what's in the fridge and when expiration dates are coming up. Because it's got Alexa in it, it means it'll tell you when you can order through. Amazon, and
or probably, don't eat that chicken.
Yeah,
sell by scorn.
Yeah, exactly.
That'd be right. Just wash it.
Or tell you people's, of birthdays or anniversaries.
Would it restock my beer?
You can order it, can't you?
Yeah, I would do that.
Maybe by drone.
Hey, that's that sounds like, yeah, that's good. What else is Harry? What else you got, mate?
Well, yeah, I mean, on the whole point of it being CES, like, as we've been saying, there's the fridges that can talk to you and do all this. I'm not so sure, and I think there's other people that agree with me, and I probably shouldn't say this on the Tech Talk show. Has it all gone too far?
No, it can never go too far. Technology will just keep striding on.
But this is, you know, phasing out natural selection. If you don't know that the chicken's bad by looking at it, then, I mean, you know, you don't need a fridge to tell you that, do you?
No,
but this is my problem with it.
I don't know. I think it's interesting. There wasn't a great deal about VR this time, was there?
There was a little. I mean, so there seems to be some... So Intel have developed a VR headset that's got the battery and the computer inbuilt, so it's
like
it's wireless. Yeah, so it's wireless, which is quite clever.
Yeah.
There's a few others like that.
James, did you pick anything up on CES that interested you?
No, other than what's been said already, yeah.
Yeah, no, I shouldn't have asked you that, should I? I put you on the spot then, didn't I?
Yeah, completely.
I'm going to ask him another question in a minute, see if he's actually
get my
awake.
Phone out now.
Yeah, hang on. He's quickly Googling CES, interesting stories. Harry, go on, you've got something else for us, yeah?
Right, yeah, one more, well. Maybe not one more.
Yeah,
depends
okay.
how much time we got.
There
was a big one yesterday. This wasn't actually from CES because I was trying to sort of steer away from that because obviously we've talked about it already. A shirt which self-cleans itself. And if I show Dan the picture here so that he knows what I'm talking about.
Oh,
if you
goodness.
Spill red wine on your shirt, it's sort
which
of like...
Which can easily happen.
It's almost made out of waterproof sort of material, so it just goes straight off you, any stain goes like straight away.
And so, is it actually in the material, or is it something you apply to material?
It's not completely clear on the story, but the as you see by the, I tweeted it out yesterday. Actually,
who's
so
your
if
researcher?
You do want to see thenextweb.com. Yeah. If you do want to see like the story on that, definitely go over to our Twitter page because that went out yesterday. But no, that looks great.
Yeah,
for all the times that you spill wine down yourself.
Which,
again, natural selection, don't do it.
Well, trouble is, with the wining take comes clumsiness, doesn't it, I think? So, well, it does for me, Dan.
Well, yeah. I've got to say yes to that.
Yeah,
really.
I have too, yeah. Anyway, it's this time of the show.
Okay, so we have our unboxing segment. This is where we unbox an item we've not seen before, found by our producer. Was it you or was it Chris this time? It was James this time.
James has found it.
Harry's going to put it up on Periscope.
Live on Periscope.
It's live on Periscope now via our Twitter.
And I'm going to unbox.
Which is at Tech Talk UK.
Oh, I'm very glad you did that. Thank you, Steve. So, okay, I'll give him the box. Okay, it's hidden in the corner, so I couldn't see it immediately.
So, Dan's opened the box. What we got, Dan? Little package or...?
So, it is a Bush stereo Bluetooth speaker.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's in a... It's
so
in
that's
a,
Tech Talk Show UK, by the way, on Twitter.
Yeah, that is, yeah. So, yeah, it's a nice little...
It looks a bit old, the packaging, I have to say. It's sort of like a...
It looks... I think it might be someone's Christmas present. It's been previously unboxed.
Has it really? No.
It looks
no,
good,
it's not. It's the seal's intact. I can see.
Brand new.
Okay. Well, maybe it wasn't my first look. Or somebody else's.
So,
first look. Okay, so we've got...
Bluetooth speaker.
Yeah, so it's a black box with... You can
sort of matte black.
Yeah. It's... it looks very good. Is it... Have we got it set up with anyone yet?
No, it needs to be...
So in the box.
I believe it needs to be set up. Yep,
there's good. So in the box, we've got some...
You can get your Barbara Streisand on the speakers,
brilliant,
Dan.
Yeah. That'd be good.
Have you got your phone
with you? Have an instruction. Yeah, I do, actually, yeah. So instruction manual. Yeah, don't really look at that.
No.
There's instructions.
Chuck that way.
Yeah, USB to micro USB.
Is that
right.
Charger? Is it charged?
Oh, that's a good point, isn't it?
Yes, it should be charged.
Okay, so I'm turning
James.
It on. Okay,
it's
there's
such
a little switch on the side.
Mate.
Okay, and there's a blue light inside.
Right, I've got my phone on.
Oh, you got
yeah, shall I do it?
Do yours, yep.
Okay. Okay. Steve DJ again.
Oh, yeah. Okay, see if you can search for it.
Bluetooth. I've got other devices.
Okay.
It's whirring away. SP925 must be, mustn't it?
Yeah, probably.
Well, if not, I've just
connected to somebody's
Bluetooth headphones or something. Right, I'm connected. So let's pick a bit of music. This is going to be really embarrassing.
There's
when
a blue light at the micro USB, which shows where it's paired on. It's a little blue light.
Is it flashing or is it still?
Here we go.
Oh, that was me. Pilot error. Hang on.
Look at this.
So straight away, I've connected.
That's changed the song, very hasn't quick. It?
What's happening? It just jumped to another track.
Maybe hold it down.
I'm trying to.
So, what do you think of the music quality?
As in
you're changing
the music selection, or
no?
In terms of once it gets going in a sec,
I've got my headphones on, but
we'll take them off, Dan.
Oh, that's very kind of you. I think I will.
Yeah, have a relax.
Okay, get them off. I'll put my feet up.
So Dan has put the speaker near to him. Not bad sound.
Yeah, it's very good.
Some of them can be a bit lacking in bass.
Yeah, they do quite often, but it's quite good, actually.
That paired virtually immediately.
Hmm. Yeah, took a mere minute to pair, didn't it? And it's actually quite good. Get rid of that now.
There's also an aux in port, so if you have if you don't have Bluetooth, you can still connect your device to it as well.
Okay.
Wonder how loud it goes.
Well, let's try it, shall we?
Okay, so
let's go. Let's whack it up. Go on. Let's see if it distorts.
I think.
Oh, you just
maybe hold it. Maybe hold it down.
Read those instructions, will you? So
I thought we weren't allowed to.
No, you're not.
Producer Chris banned instructions. Oh,
here he goes.
You got it playing?
I have now.
This is exciting for everyone listening, isn't it?
Yeah, there you go. No.
No.
Oh, Harry, help
I think
him
it might
out.
Be on its loudest. Yeah.
Try turning it down. See if,
Yeah, James, you really are cleverer than you look.
Well, you'd have to be. So the volume control.
I mean, you're pleased you're with us today.
Yes, I'm loving it.
Yeah, your mum's going to really, really appreciate okay, you.
Yeah, no, the volume control works. It's good.
That's not bad at all. So is that full blast?
Let me see. That's full blast.
Yeah, that's full blast.
Yeah.
That's all right, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm quite impressed with that. Okay.
One of our followers says, good song choice, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I'm not as old as I look, Harry. Maybe. Right, so I'm actually quite impressed with that.
Yeah.
How
much do you think it is?
Well, I was just going to ask battery life.
Oh.
Got anything on that, James?
Yes. How long would you... do you want to have a hazard a guess?
Yeah, okay. Then let's play 20 questions.
I've turned it off, by the
5 hours.
A bit more. 8 hours.
Eight hours?
Yeah.
8 hours?
And it charges. So, we don't have to take around batteries.
Okay.
Yeah.
As a USB cable.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you can get power. That's how you charge it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And as I mentioned earlier, there's an aux port.
Okay.
So you don't, if you have a really old phone or an iPod, one of those old classic iPods that don't Bluetooth, you can just connect it
That's really good.
Is it water resistant or proof or anything? Do you know?
Well, you think of taking it in the shower?
Yeah, should we?
I'd like a bit of a shower music.
Product test.
Get to the rhythm.
So, how much do you guys think this costs?
Dan, you go first.
I'm going to go £30.
Okay.
I'm going to go £24.99.
Well, Steve is spot on there.
No.
Yeah.
I get it. What do I get?
I get to have it.
I think it was yours.
Mine. Is it yours? £29.
$24.99.
Okay, brilliant. Okay. So,
and so, what do people think then? Is it back in the box or it rocks?
Because I'm gonna go. Oh, I don't know. I'll tell you what, Harry. What do you think?
I think it rocks. Yeah.
Yeah, I think. Yeah. James.
Yeah, it rocks. It looks like a great Christmas present.
For me, I'd want one that was waterproof.
Yeah.
Or water resistant at least.
And okay.
And it looks like you can get them in black, red, or white. It's quite nice. You could.
Yeah. I'm gonna go back in the box. Actually.
Yeah. Oh.
I mean, it's a bit it's not very exciting, is it?
Oh.
It doesn't do... It's just a bit...
Downer all so early in 2017.
Yeah, I am.
Oh.
Yeah,
it's usually Dan that's going.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's Downer Dan. Downer Dan. So what would you do? You.
I think it rocks.
Okay.
I'm actually looking for something
so yeah, there you
consider
go.
That.
Yeah. Well, it's done, isn't it? So there we go. Ooh. So thank you, Harry, and thank you, James. Lovely to have you on the show, matey.
Cheers.
Brilliant. Thanks, James.
Right. So, actually, we're going to go with a pre-record now. It was Jay and myself spoke to Luke Quilter. And Luke is from Sleeping Giant Media. So Jay and I are here after lunch.
Hello, Steve.
Hi, Jay.
How are you?
I'm great, mate. Thank you. And Luke Quilter from Sleeping Giant Media has joined us. Welcome, Luke.
Thank you very much. Yeah, welcome.
And you're looking forward to the unboxing event, which we're going to run in a little while.
Looking forward to it. Also slightly apprehensive what is going to be in that box. So we'll have to wait and see.
There's quite a few bits of tech, actually, which we'd be interested to get your feedback on. Tell us a little bit about your company and what you do.
Yeah, sure. So I run two businesses. One's Sleeping Giant Media and one's Giant Campus. The Sleeping Giant Media has been around for 8 years now. Myself and business partner set it up. We've taken that from no funding and we're basically growing that to a team of 40 people and a turnover of 1.5 million, delivering paid search, SEO and social media, which is quite cool, good fun, lots of work involved. But also really exciting to have launched a new business recently in the last 6 months called Giant Campus, which is essentially aimed at businesses that want to deliver the digital marketing themselves, so training them up so they can understand how to do the work themselves. So yeah, it's an exciting time for us.
I mean, companies more and more seem to need that huge digital presence, but it's really important that that's managed regularly and it's current and it's up to date, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's... The rules are always changing when it comes to digital, so that for businesses to try to understand actually how to deliver it is constantly a changing sort of set of goalposts. So what we try to do is understand what comes next and make sure that we align our service delivery to make sure that we're ahead of the curve and the people we work with are ahead of their competitors. So yeah, challenging, but ultimately it allows businesses to kind of level the playing field somewhat. So the bigger businesses that maybe rest on their laurels and think they've got it sewn up can be quickly undone by a tech startup which is, you know, doing some creative, clever marketing.
So obviously I'll come to Jay in a sec. If I'm a new business and I've obviously got a web presence like everybody would have and a social media presence, what sort of advice would you give me about how to manage that and how to optimise that?
I mean, firstly, it's like anything, if you're looking to decide whether you do it yourself or whether you employ someone to do it, I think it would go down to the same question you ask yourself about accountants and whether or not you actually do the books yourself or whether actually you doing the books is taking too much time away from the things that you're best at. And I think the same question applies to digital, whether you recruit agencies or staff to do that. Fundamentally, from a digital perspective, it's still marketing, still understanding your customers, understanding what they search for, and then making sure that your website, your social media activity reflects the things that they're interested in. If you do that well, you've got a much better chance of connecting, engaging and bringing people back to your site in order to then introduce your brand, your business and your service. And that's all we do as a business, try to make sure that we reflect what people do in the physical world in a digital space.
And does that message change across the platform that you're putting it on? So whether it's web, Twitter, whether it's any other social media, LinkedIn, do you advise people to change that message?
Yeah, I think you've got to change it to a degree. I think the fundamental strategy, the underlying messaging and the branding, the tone of voice, that sort of thing generally should stay the same across those different channels. I think that you tailor the delivery in terms of whether it's, you know, so Twitter, obviously you've got kind of character limitations, or Snapchat, it's a more visual kind of channel. So you do have to change the way it's delivered, but at the same time, you know, fundamentally, you know, you're trying to keep the consistency of your brand image, your tone of voice across those different channels, but at the same time, understand how people interact differently with those channels.
So I had a bit of a Twitter stalk of Sleeping Giant Media before we came on air, and I saw a room with lots of balls and lots of sleeping bags or sleeping hit things. Do you want to tell us a bit about that? It looks super fun.
Yeah, so we've got one of those random rooms in your office that you can't really do too much with, and actually I've always wanted a ball pit in my house. My wife said no, quite rightly, so I decided to do...
Why no?
Yeah, well, it's crazy madness, but apparently it's not logistically possible in our house, so we decided to build a ball pit, and we put some tiered seating in, and what has happened is actually become our kind of training room. And I think what's quite exciting about that is that you get a lot of people that come into the office and they can be quite stuffy and kind of, you know, what you would classify as old school kind of business people, and they see the ball pit and suddenly the inner child kind of comes out and actually they're swan diving off the top steps and stuff like this. And what it means is you start the meeting with a smile, you can kind of free your creativity, and it's just a fantastic room where, you know, yes, it's got some amazing coverage through BBC and things like that, but actually the purpose is to create an environment where people want to be, and we're, you know, huge advocates for making work something that people want to do and enjoy and is part of their life rather than it's seen as a job.
I think it's a brilliant idea. But I'm kind of interested, do you think, kind of, where do you think social media is going? Are you kind of, we had someone on earlier who was talking about how he thinks personalization is the future of social media, and would you agree with him on that?
Yeah, I mean, personalization is important, and I think that will not just across social, but also into kind of user experience. So when you get to the website, serving up content specifically based on your browsing habits and trends and information that the companies have gathered about their users. So I think personalization is important. Absolutely, I think realistically, social is a personal channel. You know, it's something that if you go back with something automated and then you're selling all the time, then actually you're not really connecting and engaging. And I think social media, particularly, is all about building relationships, connecting and engaging, so has to be by definition a personal experience.
And how easy is it to do that, do you think? How easy is it to know what people want or what they're browsing, and how do you convert that into a positive outcome for the company?
Very difficult, it seems, because we talk about it a lot with our clients and potential clients. You know, we're here today at an event, and you know, there's 300-400 people with exactly that same question on their lips, asking how do they kind of make it more personalized. So it's not an easy thing to do. I think the thing that people sometimes forget that actually it's just marketing. That everyone gets caught up in the fact that it's technology, and technology is great, but it's just the channel that you use to deliver the message. And actually the key to it, the key to success, is going back to the fundamentals and the basics of marketing, which is who are my customers and what do they get excited about. And if you can understand that sort of thing, you can then deliver that through the different channels and the different forms of content. And that's, you know, the best advice I can give to anybody is not to get overwhelmed with the concept of technology, and focus on the customer and the messaging, and that will then translate itself effectively across those channels.
I think it's so hard with social media and sort of platforms that are coming up now, and it's always changing. You have one year you've just Facebook and Twitter, then you've suddenly got Snapchat, Instagram, all of them. What tips would you give to businesses how to keep up in this ever-changing social media world?
So the trouble is that There's a kind of, you know, there's an adoption curve to everything, in a sense. You get people who jump on all the channels as soon as they're out. And I think sometimes it's a case of stepping back and going back to, again, going to who are your customers and what do they actually do. Yeah. Like, Snapchat's a fantastic channel, but it's not for everybody, in the sense that depending on the service or the product that you sell, it's not necessarily where people are going to go to buy that or connect or find out information about it. So again, it's a case of, yes, give it a try and embrace it. I always do that with, you know, the same. I jump on every single channel and I give it a try and see how it kind of could work for my clients. But at the same time, I wouldn't fear that, in the sense that actually, you know, it's not relevant for everybody to use Snapchat. It's not relevant for everybody to use, sometimes Google. You know, that sometimes it's not always relevant that people search for certain things. So it's mixing up and understanding what channels they actually use.
I suppose the thing is that platforms like Snapchat and Instagram, they have kind of huge demographics, but with younger people, for example, whereas Facebook is probably a little bit more broad and Twitter is probably a little more broad. So yeah. I suppose it's trying to tailor each platform to different businesses and their needs.
Absolutely. And again, when we're looking at the different customers, we define them in different groups, so we'd actually understand that if you've got a younger demographic and also your product's relevant for an older demographic, knowing that each of those different groups has different interests and different desires and different areas that they operate. So absolutely right, we would look at kind of understanding those different groups and then defining the messages that we're going to say, but also the channels that are most effective based on that audience you're trying to target. So broadly speaking, Snapchat, younger audience. If you've got something that's for millennials, great place to be for them is Snapchat. Facebook, very active groups at, you know, plus 60s, you know. So actually it's a much broader audience, and depending on your market and the service and the product that you offer will determine what channels are more a higher priority for you.
And I suppose with that, obviously it's about getting the right message to the right people. How, when somebody searches, is it different platforms give different criteria about who would become the highest on any particular searches? Do you have to optimize for the particular platform that you're going to target?
Yeah, so primarily in the UK we talk about Google. It's about 90% of the UK market, and there are other search engines out there, obviously Bing and sort of Yahoo feature. But realistically they're 10%. So most of our work and most of the conversations we have with people is about how you appear higher within Google. And they do have different algorithms between the different search engines. Google is generally recognised as having the most sophisticated one. And I think, again, the thing that the people need to realise is it's not necessarily something to be too technically concerned about. But, you know, things like, for example, what I was talking about today, you know, do you answer the... Think of the questions that your customers ask you on a daily basis. Do you have an answer to that on your website? And I would say 90% of people don't, you know, yeah. And actually... It's those sort of things that if you write that content on your website, you've got a better chance of ranking for it. So, yes, there are differences between the different search engines, but again, it's going back to signposting to Google what it is that you have on your website so that they can match you with the people that search for it, content questions and inbound linking to the site as well. So some simple things that people can do.
And I assume that needs constant management, needs constant revision and updating. And is it true that it's better to do one platform well rather than five badly? Is that?
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I think, yes, firstly, there is no finished website. And again, I posed that question. It was a bit of a trick question. And actually, it's about, you know, constantly evolving your website and expanding that content and making it kind of relevant and also showing to Google that you are still in business and you're still talking about different things. But yeah, I think if you're limited with resources, there's no point trying to do six or seven different channels poorly, because you're going to reflect badly on yourself and your business and your brand. And actually, it's worthwhile trying to pick the things that you can kind of do well, or employ an agency.
Yeah, of course. And if I was going to employ an agency, how would I get details of yours?
Yeah, but nice bring that round. Yeah, so you can find us obviously online at sleepinggiantmedia.co.uk. You can find us on Twitter as well, Facebook, etc.
Luke, thank you so much for talking to us. I look forward to seeing you at the unboxing event. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well, there we go, Dan. That was a pre-record from about a month or two ago now.
Yeah. Yeah, so, some really good advice there.
Yeah, no, great company, actually. Great company. Obviously, join the conversation at our Twitter page. So tweet away to us. That's Tech Talk Show UK on Twitter. And we're joined now on the line by Mark Duke. And he's from Mark Duke Consulting. Hi, Mark. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having me.
That's great. Yeah, no, thank you. And it'd be great to speak to you. Now, I know you provide marketing support to companies. How did that actually come about? How did your consulting set up, and why have you specifically gone towards the tech sector?
So I started out of university working in a medium-sized PR agency, then went to a very large PR agency, worked for a tech vendor, and then, taking it to about 2002 here, got caught in the tech slowdown,
yeah.
Started freelancing, and then probably about 8 or 9 years ago, had a midlife crisis, or early midlife crisis, as I like to call it.
Dan's been having one of those for years, funny enough.
And actually looked at where my work was coming from and the work that I really enjoyed doing, and spoke to a number of people and thought that really what I wanted to do was effectively become a startup marketeer or a CMO in a box.
Yeah.
The premise being that marketing is crucial to every company, particularly startups, particularly tech startups. And really what I felt my role was to help those emerging companies get to where they want to get to faster and smarter without the need of necessarily bringing somebody on board full time, without necessarily bringing on an agency or making sure that you're making best use of an agency. So really my role is, I term myself a CMO in a box. And that's exactly what it is. Very, very, very broad, very flexible, depending on what different startups want, which I'm sure we'll cover as we go through.
Yeah, so obviously there are very, very specific requirements for marketing within the tech sector. Is that right? Or is it the same message regardless of what sector it is?
I think it's pretty much the same message at whatever sector. I think it really comes down to who your target, in inverted commas, consumer is. I know the lines are fairly blurred between business to business and business to consumer, or becoming more blurred, but I think it's fairly generic depending on which sector. But when you're talking about the tech side of things, you're really getting into the whole, I guess, value versus technology or feature discussions, which is really, really crucial for any company to kind of express that value to whichever customer they're trying to attract or maintain, for that matter.
Mm, that's interesting, yeah. So,
Dan's having a choking moment.
Left over from Christmas.
So. Yeah,
You're concentrating on startups, but I'm just wondering, with established product companies that may be looking to launch a new product, Is there similar mistakes that they make in terms of marketing and business growth, or are there particular mistakes that startups that make that could, you know, if they knew that they'd be able to, you know, rectify that straight away?
I think there is actually there is a slight difference. I guess a larger company launching a new product into a new area, a new market, they are very much operating in startup mode, but mm-hmm. the mindset and the psyche tends to be very different. Mm-hmm. Often you find that startup companies are, you know, the term is bootstrapped. In other words, they're doing it really by the sweat of their brow. Mm-hmm. There's very little cash to play with, so therefore that kind of creates a different sort of dynamic. In terms of the kind of common mistakes that I've seen, a lot of it comes down to focus mm-hmm. in terms of exactly who we're selling to. I often go through the whole process of, you know, well, what, you know, what is our customer called? Where do they live? What's their title? What do they do, et cetera? That side of things, that's on the one hand. And the other side of things is spending too much focusing on, we have a fantastic product or fantastic solution, without really defining very clearly what the value and more to the point what the need is and what the value proposition is. Yeah. And I think that particularly with smaller companies, that tends to be more of a problem than with the larger companies, who have more of an inverted commas established marketing machine, which means they can do a lot more. But in terms of focus and target and value, those problems are the same across the board.
I mean, I suppose an existing company will already have had contact with their clients or customers. Therefore, they know what their clients and customers want, and also what they're actually purchasing and why they've purchased it. Whereas with a startup, it's sometimes difficult to understand that and to actually describe the value that your product will bring. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. But it's interesting that you mentioned about in terms of existing customers, because you kind of allude to a point about brand and trust. Because yeah. often existing companies, people know them, they understand them, more to the point they trust them, which therefore means they're prepared to spend their money with them. Whereas with a startup, no one's heard of them, no one knows them. What's the credibility? You know, why should I trust them? And that's a very difficult bridge at times to cross for emerging companies who particularly, you know, want to scale and want to grow quickly. And that's really where marketing plays a really, really key role.
So you said you're a CMO in a box. So could you describe a bit more, you know, about what sort of services you provide to a startup?
So it's fairly broad. So I tend to sit down with either the founder of the company or invariably the commercial director, and really sort of start with what's the business objectives? Where does the company want to get to? So I guess the strategic piece, so working on what the marketing strategy should be, do some work in terms of what the planning, in terms of let's put together a marketing plan. It's remarkable how often companies don't actually put a formal marketing plan in place. It doesn't have to be a war and peace exercise. And then cover off certain elements of the marketing execution. So that could be content creation, that could be PR, that could be social, it could be events, it could be partnership marketing. It could also be support on the fundraising side, which for startups can be very significant. So it's and in other instances, it can also be to act as a mentor or a sounding board for companies. That's something I've done a lot more recently, where people have had junior people in place who just need somebody there to say, that's right, or don't think that's a great idea, or why are we doing this, which often doesn't happen where you've got some independent sounding board. And I've also recently taken on a non-exec role for a company called Brain Broker, following on doing some messaging work for them. And really, my focus there is to sort of say, you know, where is the business going? You know, here are some of the key things I really think we need to be doing. And from my side of things, I take a very, very sales-oriented side to my marketing. So I'm very happy to have conversations with a commercial director along the lines of, what leads do we have in the pipeline? What does marketing need to do to help us close those leads? If we don't, why not? And try and work on those things. So it's a lot of different things, but really the common starting point is, what is the business objective and what can marketing do to help the company reach that objective?
And also, I suppose measuring success on marketing can be very, very difficult. Can't obviously sales are sales, and that's, you know, that's one key indicator. But how else do you advise people to measure the success of their marketing spend?
Well, it's funny because I have a mantra with people which sometimes goes, you know, if you can't measure it, don't bother.
Yeah.
Which kind of focuses the mind on the marketing side. I mean, the fact is that the advent of technology in its uses within marketing, particularly within digital marketing and social media, has meant that there's so much more we can measure and can attribute. But I try, wherever possible with people, to try and focus the attention on numbers and metrics and what we can measure. So if it's number of followers, number of likes, number of retweets, number of emails, yeah, number of shares, number of meetings, and obviously the golden one in terms of, you know, the revenue targets. And in a way, I actually often start from the end point and work backwards. It says, well, you know, what's the numbers objectives in terms of the sales? Therefore, how many customers does that mean? How many prospects does that mean? How many leads does that mean? And try and break it down by different activities. So in effect, kind of pull the pieces of the jigsaw together, but trying very carefully to make sure that everything can be measured, and everything can be tested, because obviously marketing is an evolving thing. It's not, you know, here's the plan, that's it, and we're stuck in a straitjacket, because there are certain things that can happen overnight that totally change the landscape. And as an emerging company, you've got to say, right, you know what, things have changed, we need to change. We can't just be wedded to it, because, you know, clearly that's a danger that all companies face, but particularly with emerging companies.
And that must be really hard for startup companies and those, because they are so precious about their invention, their new product or their new service. Is that true?
It is, very, very much so. And, you know, sometimes, I mean, I have lots of conversations with companies, and probably within about 90 seconds, I can get a fairly quick steer, really based on my experience, on, you know, is there an addressable market here?
Yep.
Is there is there somewhere where we should be going here? Do I understand the proposition? If I'm struggling to understand it, then I'm going to struggle to communicate that and really try and hone that down. And sometimes it's also a case of, you know, doling out some tough love to people, but sometimes you have to do that, because ultimately it's really about being straight and giving people something. They may not want to hear it, but sometimes they have to.
Yeah. Dan?
Yeah, I was just wondering, Mark, you're obviously working with a lot of sort of new and innovative companies, and I'm just wondering if you can sort of, if you can say, you know, if you're seeing any sort of really exciting new tech that you could share with us.
God, some of the trends that I'm starting to see a lot of excitement and noise about is about the whole AV as in virtual reality and augmented reality. I think that is starting to really coalesce and is starting to be very, very significant. I'm also seeing things more in terms of marketing technology side of things. Things like programmatic, in terms of programmatic advertising. Okay. Also, a continuing trend in the whole marketing automation space. Mm-hmm. There continues to be a lot more, I'm seeing a lot more on that side of things. And also just more in terms of measurement and metrics, particularly in terms of digital marketing. I know that's fairly broad, but those very much seem to be hot areas. And, you know, other things that I'm seeing more of, things like Internet of Things, where connected homes, seeing a lot more of actual products starting to come to market, and also health tech as well. I know that's fairly broad areas, but there seems to be much more on those side of things.
Yeah. I mean, we see a lot of spend in marketing where people are going to shows or trade fairs and things like that. Are you a great lover of those? Do you advocate looking at
them? I'm a huge lover of them, actually. Right. And in fact, often when startups say to me, "Oh, we want to do an event," my first question to them is, "Do you understand how much time and potential money you're going to be investing
process.
In this?"
Yeah.
And you know, often I will turn around and say, "Well, partner with an existing brand, with an existing trade show." I've had some tremendous experiences trade show wise with. One startup the startup actually was acquired by BT, a company called Pelipod, and they won a competition. By the way, that's something that startups should look out for.
competitions.
The various competitions are out there. There are loads of startup competitions, and really pay attention to those. Those are tremendous opportunity. So the Pelipod one, they were shortlisted for a space at Retail Week's trade fair, trade event.
Yep.
And some of the leads that were generated from that event were just staggering. So I'm assuming that you do it right and you understand exactly what you expect to come from it. And, you know, down to the point of saying, well, you know, if we're going to take a stand at a trade show, how many leads do we think we're going to get from the day stroke 2 days? And is that worth our investment? Now, in some instances, it might not be. In other instances, it might really be, particularly if the right people are at that place. So I'm a massive, massive advocate for trade shows and events. Big, big, big time.
Yeah. And also, you're right about awards and competitions for innovation is really important. And I think, hopefully, over the coming weeks, we might have some news about the Tech Talk show as well. So, so that's something to look out for in the future. It has been fantastic to speak to you, Mark. Thank you so much for taking the time. Really good advice for startup companies and existing tech companies. So I appreciate that. Where can people get more information?
So in terms of where you can find me, I'm a big LinkedIn person. So M-A-R-C, Mark with a C, and Dukes. If you look me up on LinkedIn, you'll find me there as a Mark Duke. And also big on Twitter as well. So simply at Mark Duke, as in M-A-R-C-D-U-K-E.
Great.
So do get in touch if you've got any queries. Yeah. Happy to help. And thank you so much for your time.
No, it's really been great to speak to you. And hopefully you'll join us again on the show in the near future.
Yeah, happy to do so. And thank you for having me. Much
cheers,
appreciated.
Mark. Thanks ever so
thank
much.
You, Mark.
Great to speak
Take
to
care.
You.
Take care. No problem.
Bye.
All right, bye.
So there we go. That was Mark. And Harry and producer James. Hello, James. I'm not going to give you I'm going to put your microphone up. I'm not going to give you any difficult questions, obviously.
I've remembered what I was going to say earlier.
Oh, really? Yeah. So
it's
come on.
It's come back to me.
Give us your bit of news.
So one thing from the Consumer Electronics Show I've seen is the Elmoji.
Oh,
so
right.
It's a robot, but it houses Elmo.
Oh.
And I don't know if you can see from there, but it's like Elmo mixed with a transformer.
Oh, yeah.
And it teaches kids to code, so I guess it encourages them more
great.
To learn.
But how that's really going to be popular amongst the female coding environment, isn't it?
Yes.
No, it's not. No, I don't know.
Transformers and Sesame Street. Yeah.
Transformers and Sesame Street, yeah. And actually, that's what we want. We want more women to be involved in
definitely
developing tech, and there are very few. So, But you can't beat a bit of Elmo.
No.
Yeah.
Looks like a good idea for kids to get people engaged.
Definitely. From an earlier age.
Yeah,
certainly. Just introduce them to it.
So, thanks. Earth-shattering news, James.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Always.
Yeah, it's great. Harry, what else is going on, mate?
Well, again, this is something that I probably should have mentioned earlier, but because quite a few people spoke to us about this online the other day on Twitter. Big story in the news. I don't know if you heard it. Someone was suing Apple over a car crash that they've had.
Yeah.
Well, the guy in the car crash actually unfortunately passed away, but he was on FaceTime. And the parents of the guy are trying to sue Apple over there not being a feature to disable FaceTime while you're driving. And I wanted to get your thoughts on this because it's a bit of a grey area, isn't it?
Yeah, I did see a bit of the story, and apparently the functionality had actually been designed a few years ago, but they just haven't implemented it.
Yeah, I think there's a few other apps
taking a bit of personal responsibility there and actually, first of all, why are the parents actually FaceTiming him?
I'm not sure if it was their parents. The parents are the ones that are suing Apple, but yeah, so their son was FaceTiming at the time of the crash. So
I mean, it's a sad story, but absolutely, it highlights the fact of actually put your phone away when you drive.
Yeah,
you know, it really isn't.
With all these gadgets, you do need to have a certain amount of responsibility yourself to sort of be controlled of it.
As the person, you have the ultimate responsibility, don't you? You decide whether to look at it or not.
It's almost like when someone tried to sue McDonald's a couple of years ago for their child getting fat.
Yeah. We'll probably move on before we get sued.
We're not food talks.
No, we're not food talks. That's coming up later. I bet they don't have a McDonald's beef burger on that.
I bet they don't.
No.
I bet they secretly want one, though.
Yeah, they do. I bet Paul and Sue, really, what they want is a nice
happy meal.
Filthy meal. Not all that smoked salmon or whatever else. Anyway, great show. Nothing else happening on Twitter, Harry. We're pretty much done for the day now, yeah?
Yeah, but I mean, next time, get in touch and we'll read out your questions.
And James, fantastic guest producer.
Thanks,
the
Steve.
Best produced show this week.
I'll let Chris know when he's back.
Yeah, give him the good news.
He's going to be worried, isn't he?
The best one of the year, I'd say, actually.
It's certainly the best one. Yeah.
So far this year.
So far. Yeah,
yeah, great. Okay. Anyway, Mark's just come back on Twitter, said thanks for having me on the show. And it was great. Both our guests, it was great of them to join us today.
Both are fantastic.
And hopefully catch up with you next week.